Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebelt. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Good evening from Tokyo.
Good evening from Niigata.
You're receiving me loud and clear?
I'm just adjusting the levels now, making sure the recording thing's working.
I know what it's like.
So you got a podcast of your own too, right?
Yeah, I've got two fairly sporadic podcasts. We do one for Tokyo Cheapo sometimes, and I also have the Hobo CEO podcast.
So what's the difference between the two?
Tokyo Cheapo podcast is, I guess, just content for Tokyo Cheapo, and the Hobo CEO podcast is completely different. It's me and my friend Nico. We're the Hobo CEOs, and we're sharing our philosophical musings based on our slightly unusual, although not that usual nowadays, lifestyle.
What do you mean by hobo CEO, man? When I think of that name, in the US, it's like a homeless guy that's a CEO.
That's exactly it. The kind of common word is a nomad or a digital nomad.
Right.
And I just don't like that term. I think it sounds a bit pretentious. I wanted to start a blog and I was looking for domain names. I wanted to use digital hobo, but someone else had that. But then I realized, well, I guess I'm a CEO of a company, and that I like that juxtaposition between some kind of homeless guy in a shabby coat and trousers who actually runs the company and is a CEO.
That's very European.
Yes.
That image that you brought up, that's very European. Like, I don't like the term nomad either. I'm not sure if I like hobo better. I always thought of us as like vagabonds.
Yeah.
More in that direction. So are you actually pushing anything on these podcasts, or are you just doing them for the hell of it?
It's more like just doing it for fun, for practice. We don't really kind of monitor the stats. We're not really sort of trying to work it, and we don't kind of keep asking people for good reviews. We just, we're basically kind of doing it because we enjoy doing it. And I think it's really good communication practice.
But at some point, you kind of feel like, I'm putting all this work in, right? So I should probably make some money from it.
I'm doing other things that are making me money. So it's like it's my hobby. I think of it that way.
Fair enough. But with the Tokyo Cheapo one, and that's kind of why I brought you on here, it's a great niche. Japan is not known to be a cheap place. Trying to make it cheap in Japan is just definitely a good idea. There's not many people even thinking of doing that.
That's precisely why we're doing it. Me and my co-founder, Greg, we were sitting around bouncing off ideas for new businesses and whatnot. And we both realized that there was no site about Tokyo on the cheap. And having us both lived there independently fairly frugally for a number of years, we knew it could be done. We thought, you know, we realized that there would be a big opportunity. You know, people would like to come to Tokyo, but they were scared off by thinking it's really expensive. But in actual fact, it's not that expensive. It's sure, it's not like Vietnam or something, but it's Tokyo is like way cheaper to visit than London or Paris, and probably New York and San Francisco too.
How do you figure it's cheaper than, let's say, New York?
You've got like hotel prices, the price of meals, cost of getting around. I mean, just simply comparing those basic metrics, Tokyo is going to come cheaper.
What's your budget for housing when you think cheap?
I just did a post about this on Medium, actually. I've been tracking my expenses for the last 6 months. So I analyzed them and made a nice little chart and table and long blog post with lots of nice pictures. Yeah, I know precisely what the living cost in Tokyo is. And what's interesting is I've done the same recording in several other cities around the world, because I've lived for a year in Berlin, a year in London, and almost half a year in a couple of places in Southeast Asia. And the cost, my monthly cost in London was about $2,700. My monthly cost in Tokyo is usually around $1,600-$1,700. And then my cost of Berlin was just slightly cheaper. So to answer your specific question, housing, you can get a one-bedroom, central, very comfortable apartment for $800 down to 500.
Yeah, but that's if you're living, not for visiting. I mean, we've looked when we came to Tokyo, and we actually settled in Enoshima, which is not in Tokyo, but it's still a nice area. And we looked hard to get a nice place, pretty cheap, and it was over 1,700. Just for the place.
And it would probably cost the same to do that in London as well. It probably costs more, actually, if you're kind of like a short-term visitor. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure the comparison would be similar. Getting a hotel in London is very expensive. Getting a hotel in New York, Airbnb prices, they're quite high.
I think around 17 to 2,200, you could probably live in both. London, I know, is a little more expensive for some reason. Berlin, definitely, man. For 1,500, you can get a really nice spot short term.
Yeah, Berlin's cheaper. Berlin is super good value.
Yeah, you said $500 to $800. Like, how is that possible for someone that's just visiting?
Well, I guess if you're just visiting, if you're here for like a few weeks or a month, it's going to be harder because, you know, you've experienced it yourself.
Well, let's even say 6 months.
6 months, I guess. There are kind of service departments you can get, which will be, they probably won't be quite as cheap as what I'm paying as a long-term resident. Yeah, if you kind of take a contract for that's more than a few months, then you do get better value.
Yeah, so that's the thing that kind of confused me about the website, because I get the whole cheap thing, right? Like, that's awesome. The idea, I love it. Because being able to live on, let's say, $80 a day in Tokyo, that's insane. Mm. I like the idea. But then it seems like you got to live there for a long time. That's not really visiting. Like, if I'm there for a year and a half or two, I'm not a visitor anymore. I can probably speak Japanese by that time.
Basically, you know, accommodation isn't the cheapest. That's probably the most expensive thing you're going to have to deal with in Tokyo. But it's certainly not going to cost you more than it would in many of the other expensive cities in the world. What's interesting is like how much money you can save on other experiences. The basic premise is, you know, Tokyo, it's still an expensive city, but it's like not the most expensive city. It's not crazy expensive. It's actually, it's a lot cheaper than London and a lot of other major expensive cities.
Yeah, fair enough. If you stay a little bit in the suburbs, so you can get a pretty good deal.
If you live in the suburbs, it gets super cheap. Depends what you want to settle with. Like if you get a share house, I mean, we're talking about, you know, having a kind of fairly nice, comfortable apartment to yourself. But there's things like share houses and you can rent rooms. There's ways of doing things on a much smaller budget than, you know, what you and I would do.
Well, I agree with you, because what I got was a really nice condo right on the tourist street overlooking the ocean, right? So that was definitely not shared housing or anything like that. But it was not that close. If I wanted to get to, I think, Shinjuku, it took like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
The location was great for some things, but not great for other things. For networking, definitely not that good. Okay, so you started this website, right? How many years ago did that start?
It's 3 years ago now. It was April 2012.
Yeah, and I've seen some crazy stats for your traffic lately. So tell me more about how you're getting the traffic to go up that high on a site like that. What are you doing?
The big thing is we've just kind of found a underserved niche. People want this type of information, and we've just been steadily putting out good quality information for several years. It's just kind of steadily gained momentum. Out of that traffic, a big chunk of it's organic. You know, Google really likes the site. I think, you know, the main thing is the fact that we're putting out this good quality content in an underserved niche. And to a smaller extent, I would attribute our ability to run the site well, make sure it's kind of speed optimized and SEO friendly and all that kind of stuff.
What do you mean by good quality content? Because I can't even agree on a book with half the people. Like, I'll read something, I'll like it, they won't like it, they'll like it, I don't like it. I don't know what's really good quality content, especially from the SEO perspective. I've been in SEO for a long time, and Google's all over the place whether it likes an article or not. So how do you figure out what to write about, and what do you mean by good quality content?
So I should really say very useful and practical content. If you look at some other media that talks about Japan and Tokyo and things to do, they're often not really that useful. It's interesting. It's like, oh yeah, I could do this in Tokyo, but it doesn't kind of follow through with, well, you could go to this specific place, which opens at this time, and this is how you get there. So like our articles, we try to make them all so they're complete pieces of information that people can act on. So that's what I mean by good quality content.
What's a piece that really drove a lot of traffic for you?
So we've got some hot favorites. Some of them are quite boring. I'll start with the boring ones. Getting from the airport to the city is something that almost every traveler is going to search for, and we happen to rank quite well for that. Returning to your question about good quality content and SEO and everything, our Narita Airport to Tokyo and Haneda Airport to Tokyo articles, they're very thorough. They cover, you know, all the options and the costs, and there's like kind of pictures to where you get on the train, where you get off. It's like a really kind of in-depth, useful guide. And, you know, subsequently people like it. And I think Google's figured that out. So we get a lot of traffic for that. But let's talk about some more interesting articles. So probably the funniest one is an article about dating and loving in Tokyo.
Oh, wow.
I put the word cheap. I put cheap sex in the title as a sort of joke, because it's not really about sex per se. It's about where to meet people, where to go on dates, and a little bit about love hotels and safe sex and things like that. Because Google quite likes our site. We rank for lots of, I don't know, terms associated with sex and Tokyo and Japan. So that brings in a lot of traffic.
I don't know if it's the right traffic that you
it's
want.
It's not the right traffic at all. The bounce rate on that article is pretty high.
I would imagine. I know I had Martin on here not too long ago, and he's got a website that's similar to that. And all of his topics, because I looked on his site, is the same. It's like how to pick up women in Korea, in Tokyo, in here, how to have quick sex here, there. Like, he's going crazy with those topics.
Yeah, I know Martin. He's I know Martin.
So how many pieces of content do you put out every week? On average?
An article every day at the moment.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and we have events as well.
What kind of events?
Sort of hand-curated list of interesting cultural events, festivals, museums. It's not comprehensive listings. There's probably Time Out would be better for that, or some other Japanese websites. But we pick out some favorites, some stuff that's... Usually we focus on stuff that's cheap or free, very interesting experiences. We don't like do all the nightlife listings. That's not really our kind of main focus. So it's like a kind of list of interesting stuff to do, ideally free or cheap.
So you've been putting out so many articles for 3 years. I don't really see any way that you're monetizing the website. I know there's a Kickstarter campaign that I can go to, but other than that, I'm not seeing you making any money from this.
Yeah, we don't make a huge amount of money yet. We make a little bit from advertising. One of the problems is it's a Japanese problem. A lot of the potential advertisers who would like to reach our audience are Japanese companies, and they're very difficult to deal with. And they don't know who we are yet because the site's in English. We do get advertising inquiries here and there, but I guess we're relatively new. We're 3 years old, and that's we're only just starting to kind of penetrate into the awareness of Japanese people, companies, and organizations. Our biggest problem is one of the ways of immediately making money from the site would be connecting with these organizations and companies, but that's quite a difficult thing to do.
Do you have any Japanese people interning or working for you?
We're thinking about hiring someone. It would probably pay off to get a salesperson to just kind of do the groundwork, knock on doors, and get some people to buy our inventory.
How much traffic are you getting now?
It's just gone over 150,000 uniques per month.
Yeah, so what I would do is I would set up a page on the website somewhere, you know, on the bottom in Japanese, explaining to the Japanese what you're doing, what the traffic is like, and how to contact you.
Yeah.
So the Japanese people see that there's a page, a business page for them, for the companies, for the advertisement. And then maybe just hire an intern if you need them to speak with the companies. But I mean, that's like the first thing I would do on here.
Yeah, we do have a Japanese media kit and advertise page. You know, Japanese people are probably not going to be looking for our site. I don't know. I think we're probably getting on the radar of some companies. And, you know, we do get a few impressions on that page every month. But I'm pretty sure the first step would be just to get somebody to sort of do the hard slog of making manual relationships. Because business is still very old-fashioned here. It's a lot about the relationships. It's not just like kind of, you know, sending an email and here's the cost per mil. And it's just a lot more manual and people need their hands held a lot more.
Tokyo's still old school.
Yeah, there's fax machines everywhere. It's like going back in time coming to Tokyo.
You should get some phone numbers, print out this page, and start faxing it to everyone.
Yeah, you're right.
So what's your plan on how to make money with this thing? Because, I mean, 3 years of work, 150,000 uniques. It just seems like it's a grind. Every day you're putting out an article and there's not much coming in. It's like, I can't imagine how long I could keep that up.
It makes enough money to pay for all the writers and the editor. So it's not really a problem. It's a big distraction because, you know, I'm thinking, oh, let's do this, let's do that.
But
basically, it's kind of at the stage where I don't need to put too much effort into it and it's self-sustaining. Well, it's growing, in fact. And as it grows, you know, the little money we make from AdSense and a few other things, that increases. So pointing in the right direction. I think like this much traffic with this specific audience in the travel space, there are people who are in buying modes. It's like a puzzle that at some point it's going to fit together. I've got income from other sources, so it's a good position as far as I'm concerned.
Do you get any free things from companies like hotels and things to review them as well, or no?
That will start happening, but sadly, I'm not getting any free lunches right now.
It sounds like that Asian culture, man. 1 year is like a day in America.
Yeah.
It's a thing about generations, right? Like maybe your grandkids will have the right relationship to get the free lunch. What other projects are you working on?
My main business is artweb.com. It's like web hosting for artists, basically.
Yeah, we talked about that. I can't imagine that having a good outcome. Working with artists and hosting. It sounds crazy to me. How is that going?
It's good. Yeah, it's a really stable business. Artists are technophobes, and we've got this really easy, simple platform. They just sign up, upload a few images, and they've got this nice, simple artist website. You know, once they've done it, they're kind of, oh, great, I've got a website now. Yeah, you know, we're hosting their website. It's a monthly subscription. It's a nice business.
I like how you use the word stable and artist in the same sentence.
Yeah, I was just saying, when I look at, because the business has been running for quite a few years, when I kind of review people who've cancelled and look and see, well, what's happening on their domain name now? Where have they gone? Have they found some bigger and better service? But often there's just no website there, or it's been bought by some speculator and it's like a sort of handbag website now or something.
It's like an SEO thing with backlinks. Yeah. The artist is probably at Kmart now working off his student debt.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a lot of the people that use the service are, they're not necessarily trying to make art a career. They're maybe like our parents' age and the art is the hobby, and they just, you know, they just want the world to see their work.
Yeah, I think your strength is going after weird niches.
That's a good epitaph.
Tell me a little bit about the Kickstarter, because you've started doing that with some products for Tokyo Cheapo. What have you learned so far? How's it going?
It's really interesting. So firstly, the Kickstarter is for a ebook guide. I guess it's like a sort of condensed version of the site, but there's a lot of new information in it. We've basically, the site is like a blog. It's a series of disparate blog posts with some interlinking and whatnot. We've got like 7 writers to do a proper guidebook and putting it in ebook. Yeah, so we're doing this as a crowdfunding campaign to raise the funds to do it. And how's it going? Yeah, it's going interesting. It's like, you know, part of the reason we're doing the crowdfunding campaign is to validate the idea. We're kind of pre-committed to finishing the book anyway. I think crowdfunding is a good way to validate things. What we're finding is a lot of people have bought it. We've had something like 150 people buy it so far. But the thing is, it's quite a low value item. It's only $15. Just like in terms of raising a lot of money, it's quite hard. We were thinking, you know, maybe it might be extremely popular, we'd get lots of sponsors and we'd kind of, you know, smash through 30K. But, you know, it looks like we'll just kind of get to our goal of 5,000. I don't know, we haven't been on any super big news yet. We've had some fairly big niche traffic. It's kind of been interesting and it's been good for the site anyway, doing all this outreach. We did a post that got shared on Hacker News and we got 10,000 people on that article in one day. I did a Medium post. That's had about 4,000 people look at it and loads of favorites or recommends. That's what it's called on Medium. We're kind of learning that there's maybe not a huge demand. Or I don't know, this is another thing, because it's a travel guide. And I'm just wondering if it's maybe the fact that we haven't like sold 1,000 copies already doesn't necessarily mean we won't continue to sell 1,000 copies over the course of the next few months once the book's published. It might be that people who want to buy a travel guide will buy the travel guide when they're about to go to the place, rather than like thinking, oh, I might go to Tokyo at some point. Let's buy this travel guide.
That's what I'm thinking too when I look at it. Unless I'm going to Tokyo and thinking of going on the cheap, which probably means I'm going for a little longer, why would I get this? I think it's niche. I don't think this will validate anything, because you could be selling these for years and updating it, and it has nothing to do with the Kickstarter. But you're 65% there, you have 16 days left, and I know that 80% of all Kickstarters that succeed, they get funded in the first 3 days. So what are you thinking of doing to, you know, you got that last push, right? The last couple days too, that do matter.
I mean, we've only got to raise $1,500. It's not a lot of money.
It's not. You might have to take out your own credit card.
Yeah, I mean, I can fund it myself right now. The campaign will be complete, we're going to get there one way or another.
I think you'll pay for it. I think so too. You might have to resort to begging a little bit, but it'll happen. If people want to reach out to you and contact you for any reason, where can they find you?
Twitter, Mr. Kirkland. Yeah, I always like to hear from people on Twitter. Yeah, that's probably the easiest way of reaching me. Otherwise, you can find me on Tokyo Cheapo and the Hobo CEO.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.